Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and this is Carl from Incredibly Strange Films, and today, actually, from Incredibly Strange Television, IST, and I'm here, of course, with my wonderful co-host, Miss Rachel. Say hello, Miss Rachel.
Hello, Miss Rachel.
And there she is. I always expect that from her, and that's a good thing. But
I am
today
here
we're
and recovered from my asthma attack, so we don't need any nurses standing by today.
Thank goodness.
That's good
Thank
to hear.
Goodness.
Absolutely.
Well, and just so you know, part of the reason that happened is because I was laughing at our conversation, and sometimes I have been known to laugh so hard that I laugh myself into an attack. So just so you know, it was a good show until I almost died.
Yeah, that used to happen to me a lot. I went to a comedy show one time, and I had to leave the theater because I was having an asthma attack because the guy was so funny.
Yep. So, yeah, sorry about that segue. You keep going now, Carl.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I'll continue that. We are here doing our Doctor Who series, and we're part three, and of course, it's spooky season. And we're doing monsters and aliens today, but we're doing it with a very, very special person, the queen, the goddess, the supreme female being of science fiction. That would be, of course, Miss Vicki Love. Hello, Vicki.
Hi, everyone. I'm just the mistress of sci-fi, okay? The queen, that's a little big, but anyway.
Make up for calling you a fan a couple of weeks ago. Sorry.
Well, yeah, don't ever freaking call me a fan of sci-fi. Oh, my gosh. Fuck. No, fuck, man. Don't ever call me a fan. I don't belong in that category. And so, So, you can call me queen if you want, but that's not appropriate either. Mistress of Sci-Fi is good. But anyway, forget the titles. I'm excited about today. I'm excited about this episode.
Okay, so since you're excited, we're going to start with you and just give us an overview of what you think of all of our wonderful monsters and aliens in Doctor Who. I was actually going through a whole list, and oh my God, there's so many. It's like you can't
forget how many there are.
Seriously,
like,
well,
dude, they're Wikipedia.
Yeah,
I was doing Wikipedia stuff.
Yeah, it starts with a 0 to 9 category, and then each letter of the alphabet is another category. Like, it's heinous.
Well, Doctor Who probably wouldn't be still in our lexicon and our hearts and souls, and we wouldn't still be waiting for the next iteration of the Doctor if it wasn't for the monsters and the aliens, because what is so cool about Doctor Who and what is so appropriate about Doctor Who is that, especially in the classic era, the monsters and aliens, it was in serial form. And so it wasn't like what we have in so many shows these days, the monster of the week, the bad guy, the villain of the day. It was 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 10 episodes that went through a whole story about these aliens or these monsters. And that's what's so bloody cool about Doctor Who's monsters and aliens, is that the reason why there are so many is that they told a whole story every single time, with episode after episode, until the whole story was done. And that's what makes these guys so incredibly cool.
Absolutely. So I'm still going to keep with you, Vic. If let's start with the modern version, the reboot. And like, do you have a favorite monster or alien out of the out of the reboot series?
Okay, it's really hard to say who might be the scariest, because a lot of the most scary ones actually started back in the classic era, and so that I don't want to name those guys.
Let's forget, you know, the iconic ones, the Daleks, the Cybermen.
I'm talking about the Great Intelligence. The Great Intelligence is, I think, one of the scariest of all Doctor Who monsters. And so, but that the Great Intelligence started way back in the second Doctor. And so, seriously, I want to say who, over and over again, who I think is the scariest. And
okay.
I think it's the Flood. And that comes from a Doctor Who special with David Tennant. And that was The Waters of Mars, which is, to me, the scariest of all of the reboot monsters. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Mars and water is always on all of us who think about going to another planet. Water is always on our mind because the scientists and the astrophysicists and everyone is always, if there's not liquid water, we can't go there. And so Europa and Enceladus and these moons, these ocean moons, are NASA looks at them and we're going to send probes to them looking for life, blah, 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 blah. So Doctor Who took this whole idea of water on Mars and turned it into one of the scariest monsters ever, because you want liquid water and you want to take a shower and you want to drink it. And the water turns you into like these zombie creatures, and they're fast, and they try to change you into the water monster zombie creatures. And it's scary. It's freaking scary. One of the scariest Doctor Who specials. It's an hour and a half, David Tennant. This was after Rose had left, after Donna had left. And so that's mine. The Water of Mars. The Waters of Mars.
Okay. So I'm now going to pass it over to Rachel. Rachel, out of the modern series, the reboot, do you have a scary monster or alien that you want to talk about?
Yes, I do. And they were first seen in, I believe, a Christmas special, which I've seen all of the specials and stuff for the modern series. I've gone to the theaters. Yes, I'm that kind of nerd. Not quite as mistressy of sci-fi as Vicky is. Your knowledge is just absolutely unfathomable. But this is one a lot of people, I feel, tend to forget, especially because it mostly did show up in specials. But that's the Cantrafari, also known as, what? Dream crabs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
So tell
dream
us about
crab.
Dream crabs.
And I can tell by your reaction right there that you're feeling bad about missing that one, huh? Because that one scares the fuck out of me. The fact that I have weird dreams anyway that I feel are very real, like I don't get quite to the point of lucid dreaming where I know that it's a dream and I can control it,
but I get to a point where I am very lucid in dreams. And so imagining this creepy creature that feeds on living human brain matter that attaches to your face and puts you into a fucked up dream state until it sucks all your brains out through your face holes kind of freaks me out a little bit.
Yeah. I actually think that that particular monster was definitely influenced to a certain degree by Alien. Would you agree with that, Vic?
I think they were a lot like the Silence. And so maybe, but there's a lot of, you know, yeah, why? Because it's a face hugger. You know, so
well, it does.
Yeah, that
it
too.
Does have a really. Oh, why can't I remember his name all of a sudden? The artist that designed all of them. Anyway,
Giger,
it's
Giger.
Really got.
Giger.
What? Yeah, Geiger.
Giger.
Yeah, Giger.
It really does. Like the design of the face hugger harkens back to that. And no, you're not wrong, Carl, because. Again, like you said, Vicky, that's not what it's called, but what do we all think of it as? It's a face hugger.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Which means that, and I think they might have even done that on purpose because that really harkens back to the fear and the intensity that a lot of people experience watching, you know, the Alien movies for the first time and seeing those. And when you see them on people, it is really a Giger. A Giger feel to how they connect to the person and what it looks like with someone that's got one of those on there. I mean, it could have just been ripped out of the pages of his freaking sketchbook. So I get that. I agree with you there. And I don't know if it was influenced by Alien or just, you know, his kind of artwork, but either way, Carl, that's like a totally valid point.
Yeah,
that is scary.
The thing that they really add to the Dreamcrafts, they have that point of order, you know, the Giger design, but then you get into those really fucked up dreams they have, which is even scarier.
Yeah.
So they
put
it together.
It's the psychological monsters. It's the psychological monsters that I think freak people out the most. I mean, if it's just a big, scary, you know, toothy, clawy, gnashy monster, it's like, okay, I'm going to be ripped to pieces. There you go. That's the end of it. But with these monsters that attach to you and you know, you stay alive in this tortured, horrendous state for however long it takes for them to drain you up. I mean, that's genuinely fucking scary. We all like our monster scares and our jump scares and shit like that. But I think the thing that genuinely scares most humans is being stuck alone with their own fucking mind for eternity.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's what the Dreamcrafts are doing.
Actually, you know, Clara wanted to stay in her dreams.
Yep.
And I think that the juxtaposition of that, she wasn't having a nightmare. The doctor and the situation outside of her was imposing upon her to come out of that. Instead of giving her a nightmare, that whole, the being outside of it and maybe also being taken away from it and seeing what was happening, that they're sucking the life out of you while making you dream. I guess that's the nightmare of it all, because when we're in Clara's dream world, she doesn't want to come out of it. She doesn't want to come out of it at all. And I don't blame her. Danny Pink was just the cutest thing ever. And his freaking exit from the show was the worst thing ever. And so, of course, these dream crabs, who knows what was going on when we only have one person who ever came out of the face hugger thing that was asked, what did it feel like? What were you dreaming or whatever? And he says it was nothing. It was like I was sleeping. And so the face huggers didn't really, in Alien, put you into that dream state to keep you there so that they could suck the life out of you. That one's always been like a vampire in my mind. That's a vampire type scenario.
Yeah.
And so, that's scary as hell. Scary as hell.
Well, it is. It's a parasitic host, which a vampire is. I mean, not all parasites have to attach themselves to you permanently to get their benefits from you. And so, and why is, you know, the story of the vampire and things of that nature, why is that one of the oldest scary stories we've been telling people, you know, about these blood-sucking or these life-sucking things? It's the oldest thing out there because it's one of our oldest fears. We're so scared of thinking that we're in control of things and finding out that we never were to begin with, that the face huggers are scary on a multitude of levels, psychologically, physically, all of it. Like, they freak me the fuck out. It was harder for me to watch the face hugger episodes than it was for me to watch the Weeping Angels. And that's saying a lot because, you know, one of my favorite Halloween decorations out front right now is a giant Weeping Angel tombstone. you can ask Carl. It's great.
It is.
And
absolutely.
Yeah. I'm into scary and spooky. Yeah, go for it, Carl.
So we're talking about the dream crafts. And what about an entity that literally leaves the doctor shaken, and he is almost destroyed at the end of the episode? He just gets away, and he literally goes to Donna and hugs her for the first time, like, I can't believe I survived that. What do you think of that entity? And that, of course, would be the Midnight entity.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, and that's the one where he's on the Diamond Planet, which is called Midnight.
Right.
And they take the trip, and in the middle of the trip, there's this thing that takes you over, and you start to speak in tandem with it, or it speaks in your voice and takes you over. And of course, it focuses on intelligence, focuses on the doctor, and almost takes him over. And it's only because one of the stewardesses on the train had already been taken over for a while, and she recognized which one was the entity and which one was the real doctor. It absolutely threw him for a loop. And that was one of the episodes I knew, you know, in my heart he was going to survive, but I didn't know how the fuck he was going to do it. Seriously, I mean, that episode shook me. And what do you guys think about that particular?
I've done a lot of reading on this one, and it never occurred to me, as I've watched it several times, but it never occurred to me that this entity possibly be a TARDIS, a crashed TARDIS, because the scenario is that a TARDIS on its own without a Time Lord is searching for a Time Lord, and this TARDIS crashed onto this planet, which is deadly to almost everything. The people that the hosts of this planet have created a vacation spot, but they have created it as such where the poison radioactive atmosphere of the planet, everything's protected by it. If there's like this big giant bubble, and it's one of those things where you just buy into it, right? And so the scenario is that this entity has tried several times to take over people and has killed many, many people, but it's never reached its purpose. And its purpose was to find a Time Lord so that it could bond with the Time Lord and get back out doing TARDIS Time Lord stuff. And so that's why it continues to hop from person to person or humanoid creature to humanoid creature until it gets to the Doctor. And with the Doctor, it treats the Doctor different than it treats humans. And that's why the Doctor is so scared and so shook by this particular monster.
Mm-hmm.
How's that? I don't know.
That's
a theory that's out there.
And that's a good theory. That's a good theory.
And so that means that if it comes into a human and it's like, oh, you're just a human and I need a Time Lord, then it just kills you. It doesn't care.
Right.
It's looking for its Time Lord companion. So that's pretty bad for the rest of us creatures out there.
And it's not exactly good for the Doctor either.
Right. And
so as far as scary is concerned, as far as
well,
it being scary, is the scary. Go ahead.
It's scary because it's never explained also. It is never explained. Many of these creatures are not explained to their fullest. But this was never explained at all. The Doctor was so afraid of it, he just wanted to get the hell away. And it's like, I'm not going to give any explanation. We're just leaving. Ta-da.
Well, so what do you think, Rach?
About
the Midnight Entity. Is it scary? What do you think? You remember the episode, right?
Vaguely. Now, remember, it's been a number of years since I've watched any Doctor Who, but I do vaguely remember it. And that one, yeah, it shakes the Doctor, but for me, like that whole possession thing, it doesn't bother me as much because most of the time when things are possessing something, it's only one person at a time. And the
right.
things that scare me more are like, the bigger shit that make the bigger issue. I mean, like this is Torchwood, I know, but like the 456, and they're
yeah.
all like,
oh, yeah.
we're going to take 10% of the Earth's humans, like human children, or we're going to kill everybody, so give us your babies. like that is the shit that scares me. I'm like, I need babies now, and I don't want you to take them. I hate you.
Right.
I'm scared. But, yeah, I'm sorry that, you know, the Doctor was scared by the thing that was going to possess him and do some horrible shit. Yeah, it was freaky. But, again, the possession thing is for me, it's almost too mundane to be scared by at this point.
Okay. That's a good point. I can understand that. For me, I was more scared for the Doctor because that was, I think of all the series I've seen, that's one of the few times where the Doctor was really, like, he was shaking. And that doesn't happen that much. Seriously.
Nope.
You know. So I think it's a very, very notable entity. Now, my next question to you guys is, of all the classic standard monsters who have appeared in both the classic and the modern version, and we're going to talk about basically every one of them. So, Vicki, I'm going to go to you, and we can talk about the Daleks, we can talk about the Cybermen, whatever you choose.
Okay, let me get back to this. The Zygons, which first appeared in the 1975 era, which is Pertwee, I think. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I could tell you right now, though. The Zygons are absolutely like up there with the scariest of both classic and reboot. And the thing about that is that the Zygons also, they clone. It's a possession-like thing. So they kill you and make a clone. And so it's a Zygon clone of you. And so then you don't know that you're interacting with a clone. You're going to tell the clone your whole plan. And you don't know that it's actually because the Zygon clones you and puts on the mask of you. And so, but they're still Zygons. And so they can report back to their head or Captain Zygon and reveal your whole plans. And so it's easier for them to win. And they have killed some of my favorite characters in all of Doctor Who, which makes them extremely scary to me. I don't want somebody to make a clone of me and then I die and it keeps going. That's no. I don't even like the whole transporter idea in Star Trek. You know, you die and your facsimile becomes real. I don't like that idea. I like being me. So Zygon. Definitely Zygon.
Okay. For me, the one thing I do have to say is that David Tennant, who was the 10th Doctor, has stated that they are his favorite monster from the show. He, you know, first one. And, of course, you know, I know the Zygons more than anything else from the Day of the Doctor. And that's a great, 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 absolutely fantastic. Of course, that was the 50th anniversary.
Right.
And,
which is a really great.
I would agree with you. And, of course, you know, that's where the 10th Doctor, the 11th Doctor, and the War Doctor get together.
Right.
And UNIT and all that. And it has, yeah, it's a great, great episode.
Yeah,
so,
it's very philosophical. I like that.
Yes, I agree. I agree. What's your thoughts on it, Rachel?
I mean, pretty much the same. I agree with you there. That's some freaky shit.
Yes.
I don't like that.
Yeah. It's just,
I don't like the idea.
And they're also scary looking.
Yeah, that's true. I don't like the ideas of, you know, people pretending to be me or, you know, alien races especially pretending to be me. And so, yeah, I get that. It's that whole disconnect with, you know, identity theft being one of the most invasive things that
yeah.
can ever happen to you. Well, like, that's not even true identity theft when they take your social security number. Not that they take your fucking face. So, yeah, I get that one 100%.
Agreed. So taking it over to you, Rachel, tell us one of the monsters that have been in both series that you want to talk about.
Well, you remember I haven't seen a lot of the first series, but I can mm-hmm. say that while looking through Wikipedia, which I have been doing just to make sure, I've been finding a couple. Let me look real quick. How about you talk for just a second, Carl, okay?
Okay, let's get the elephant out of the room.
I've got one.
Okay.
I have one. And
go
I think
it.
I know why he's the scariest. You don't ever see this guy, I think. I'm actually not sure, but I remember him now. I don't think you ever see him, but you hear mention of him in a number of different episodes, and that would be the Galactic Toymaker.
Yeah, Celestial Toymaker.
Yes, Celestial Toymaker, that guy.
So he like traps people in creepy, weird games where basically their life and freedom are the stakes for them to get out. And he's got his hand in a whole number of fucked up pots across the universe because he likes playing these games, and he gets a lot of different races involved and a lot of different monsters, basically because he just likes fucking with people. And we all know that there is no reasoning with someone like that. If they're doing it because they just like to, you're never going to get them to stop.
Yeah. Very
true. That's something that scares me is beings that you can't reason with. I think that's why a lot of people hate children, is because you can't reason with them. That's another reason that sociopaths are so bad. Children are sociopaths. But, yeah, the Celestial Toy Maker is literally just, like, the universe's biggest sociopath. And that's fucking scary.
Yeah.
So that's me. Sorry.
No,
so
he is. He's scary. Oh, no, I remember the first time I saw episode of The Celestial Toy Maker. Oh, my gosh. I was just like, oh, my God. Is that guy the most evil motherfucker ever? He's just pure evil. He's more evil than the Master, because the Master likes to mess around with the Doctor. But the Toy Maker, he doesn't care who he messes around with. He just wants to be evil. And he uses toys.
He uses scary toys.
Yeah,
and I don't even think it's that he's, you know, intentionally trying to be, like, as evil as possible. He just tends to enjoy things that make us think he's as evil as possible. And that's why I'm saying he's so scary, is because he does it for fun. You know, a lot of these other monsters, the Daleks and all this, they have a fucking mission. They have a set mission.
Yes.
Whether it's exterminate, annihilate, you know, copulate, whatever. This guy doesn't have a mission. He just wants to fuck with people.
Yes. And he did. He's one of the oldest, along with the Daleks. He's one of the oldest villains of all, because his first doctor was William Hartnell. And that first, and the doctor being William Hartnell, he's like, what is this guy's problem? There's a lot of episode missing from that series of episodes, but he's like, what is going on with this guy? And it takes him a little while to figure out that he's just plain evil, a sociopathic evil. He'd be Jeffrey Dahmer if he ate him, you know. He's just out there.
Right, and that's the thing, is that's the scariest thing I can think of, is people like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and then also, I just have to mention this, because we were talking about companions before, and I said there was one companion I didn't like at all, and his name was Steve, and he's in the William Hartnell episodes, and he comes in after Ian. We have Ian Chesterton, and then we get Stephen to replace him, which Stephen is a narcissist himself, and he just thinks he's a hero, and he's really a coward, and he's just horrible. And I can't help it, but, you know, the Toy Maker could have, you know, done away with Stephen, and I would have been okay.
Now, unlike the two of you, I knew immediately that the Celestial Toy Maker was evil, because he's played by Michael Gow. Okay? Michael Gow, probably best known as Alfred in some of the Batman movies, but back in the day, he was in so many Hammer films, and he was an evil, you know, he all his characters were evil. So I already knew that. And he's wonderful. because I did take a look at that series of episodes with Michael Gallen, because I love Michael Gallen. So I already knew that. But, yeah, the other thing I have to say about the Celestial Toymaker, I think that the screenwriter of Saw definitely needs to give some of his money to the person that wrote the Celestial Toymaker, because it's very, very, you know, it's very close.
Oh, yeah.
You would agree with that?
Yes.
Oh, 100%. I mean, yeah, absolutely. I actually think a lot of modern horror movies need to be forking over money to the Doctor Who writers. I'm just going to leave it at that. Because that's a whole nother show. Maybe we can do that in a few months or something when we're not so busy. Like, all of the shows that need to be paying money to Doctor Who writers for blatantly ripping off their shit.
Yeah.
I like that idea. We'll work on that. I think that's a good idea. Seriously.
Yeah, that is a good idea.
I have occasionally say.
You know, there's no question in my mind that that's true, particularly with this character. Yeah, but again, Michael Gal, if you've never seen it, you can get the old episodes on the BBC channel, which you can get through Amazon, and it's well worth it.
BritBox. BritBox.
Yeah, BritBox. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. BritBox is amazing right now, and it's actually a really cheap subscription. So, yes, get your BritBox, and you will get all your Doctor Who fix. That's actually why I have BritBox now, is strictly for Doctor Who. So, well.
There you go.
When I'm not watching Doctor Who. Yeah.
So, I have to go with the elephant in the room in this case. And they are, along with the Cybermen, the Daleks, are the primary, one of the primary enemies of the Doctor. And, you know, that goes
from the first. I thought you said we were staying away from the big ones. Are we doing that now?
We have to mention them at the very least, and we'll do this very quickly. But the Daleks, I think, are really interesting in terms that they are primarily human. And I think what we'll do is we'll talk a little bit about the Daleks, but we also need to talk about Davros. And the incantations of Davros through the series. And I really, you know, when you talk about iconic Doctor Who enemies, you can't get more iconic than the Daleks. So just very briefly, ladies, we'll start with you, Rachel. What do you want to say about the Daleks? And then we'll go right into the Cybermen, and then we'll go elsewhere from there.
Exterminate. And B, I love squid. And, you know, they're creepy little squid creatures inside their battle armor. And I don't know. It's weird because they weren't as scary to me. Because they've been, you know, a foe of the Doctor since the very beginning, pretty much. And frankly, let's all admit this. We can say it now. It's not too soon anymore. They looked really dumb in the first few series. I'm just going to say that. So I don't find them as scary as I find them almost kind of like a funny throwback to old school sci-fi.
Yeah. Absolutely, I agree with that.
And, you know, there was an episode where they basically proved that at least one or two Dalek can be ultimately reasoned with. And when they did that, it almost killed the Dalek for me completely, because it was like, okay, you know, before this, that you weren't able to reason with them. You basically just had to, like, outsmart them and get the fuck out of the way. But when they had an episode where the doctor ultimately kind of talked him down. I was like, oh, okay. That's going to lead to some interesting episodes in the future, but they're no longer as single-minded and focused as I thought they were. So I don't mind them, but I know the doctor's going to be able to get out of it anytime he's in a confrontation with a Dalek.
Okay, so we'll take it over to Vicky.
Okay. I have a Dalek, three of them staring me in the face right now, and Davros also. They are my favorite Doctor Who villain. Not going to say monster. They're just my favorite villain because they're the first villain. They're the first villain, and the whole mythology of the Time Lords and the Time War are all wrapped up in the Daleks. And then Davros and the Doctor and the creation of the Daleks, and then the pureness of the race, and that little bit of Nazism that comes in. There's so many wonderful stories that come out of the Daleks. So many that I love every single one, but the one I love the most out of all of them, and I'm talking about, I love the Matt Smith ones. I watch them all the time. Although I feel like watching Doctor Who. Which Dalek episode am I going to watch tonight? That's I do that because I just love the Daleks. I love the way that they're just so single-minded. That's the scary part. They're so single-minded. And yes, their minds can be changed, because in the Ninth Doctor, in episode 4, I think, or 6, I'm not exactly sure which one it is, but believe all the Daleks are dead because of the Time War. And so it sets up the Daleks for the rest of the reboot, this episode. There's this guy who collects, he's a collector. He collects all kinds of things, but his specialty is things from space, things that nobody else has. And he has this giant pepper pot that's alive, and he doesn't know what it is, and no one does. And they've been torturing it. And Rose, who comes in as the softness, we've already seen that she's soft in a couple of, and not soft, weak, but she has compassion. And she comes in, and she's put into the presence of this Dalek, and bam! She connects with it, and the Dalek comes alive and remembers what it is, but it doesn't kill her. And so, yes, just like what you just said, Rachel, the Daleks can learn, the Daleks can change, they can be reasoned with, especially one-on-one. But also, never forget that the Daleks killed Captain Jack Harkness. And it was because of Rose that he was brought back to life and became immortal. And so the Daleks are just not just, I hate that word iconic. It's so overused. That's why I'm not a fan. They are the best villain because they're throughout. How's that?
That works.
I like that.
I like that too. So my thoughts on the Daleks are two things, or actually three. First off, that episode, the first episode that the Daleks were in, which was 1963, was written by Terry Nation, who's one of the great science fiction writers.
Yay, Terry Nation! Yay!
Okay. And we are going to get into that more and more in terms of the writers, when we talk about the writers, which will be maybe the next episode or at least two episodes away. But seriously, that's number one. Great, great writer created them, okay? Second thing is that, you know, Vicky's got it right. Without the Daleks, you don't build on the Doctor Who universe. You really don't. I mean, that is the nascent point where everything started to expand. So that's like the Big Bang. And the Daleks are the Big Bang for Doctor Who, no question. And third,
right,
and most important for me, is that Ace beat the shit out of him with a baseball bat.
Love it.
Yeah, well, they were, Daleks were,
go ahead.
You know, they had to, there's this time war, and Gallifrey has been destroyed. How do you destroy, how do you scare, how do you kill Time Lords? How do you do that? And so the whole mythology of the Time Lords, you know, why did the Time Lords steal away Gallifrey and everyone in the universe think that Gallifrey had been destroyed? Why did they, why? And so the Daleks are their you know, number one enemy, and building a myth around that is just, I mean, they could have done it with the Cybermen, but the Daleks were first, and Terry Nation is a great writer, so yeah, it's the Daleks.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well,
and
don't get me wrong.
Go ahead.
I never said I didn't like the Dalek. I think they're important,
right,
and amazing. I just don't think they're the scariest.
No.
No, I would agree with you on that, because there's a sense that the Doctor will always prevail against them. You know, you have that expectation.
I mean, if there was ever an end to Doctor Who, I think it would have to be the Dalek finally defeating him. That's the only way I can imagine the show ending. Like, for real, no more Doctor Who ever. The Dalek need to be the final crux of that. Still not the scariest. I mean, even scarier than that is the thought of Doctor Who ending. But
yes, you're making me
think. I get what you're saying. They're important, and they are wonderful, and I love the Dalek episodes, but if I'm going for scariest monster, they're not it.
Right. I agree.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You can outrun a Dalek. They do fly a little bit, but you can outrun them, and you can hide from them. So,
I'm a smoker with asthma problems. I probably could not outrun a Dalek, but that's neither here nor there.
Well,
if it's my time, so it's my time.
Both you and I always thought we could go up a couple flights of stairs weaselly and still, like, escape them. But now times they can elevate and shit. So we're both dead, basically. We're exterminated. Anyway, I think now, we need to go to the original series and talk about our favorite. I know that or scariest monster, let's say that. And I know you're at a slight disadvantage here, Rachel, so I'm going to let Vicky go first, and I'll go second. And if you've got something to say at the end and figure some things out, you can do that too.
Vicky, I have one thing to say.
Okay.
One thing to say really quick. As far as that goes, just because they're monsters and aliens in Doctor Who does not mean that they're bad. And
we'll get to that. We'll get to that, because that's the last one we're going to get to. Absolutely. No question.
Okay.
Because
you see a lot of that in the first series. So I just wanted to put that out there, and you guys go.
Okay, so as far as the first series is concerned, Vicky, the classic series, what's your scariest monster or alien?
I have several, but I wanted to choose one that scary because of what it does and everything, and so the Autons. They show up also in the reboot. But, and so I guess they could have been for, you know, our last subject, but the Autons are, and so they can.
Is that the mannequin people?
Yes. Yes. A mannequin people. Okay. They're, you know, if a mannequin is like coming at you from down the street, at first you're going to think that's a strange looking human and you're not going to run from it, right? It's dressed up, it's got clothes on, it's kind of walking weird, it's got a face, and so you're not going to realize that it's a monster until it gets closer to you. And they're relentless. They're absolutely relentless. They're coming up, they're like Cybermen. They just keep coming after you. And, yeah, they're just – they're scary to me. And their pieces of their plastic are like, sentient. And so, yeah, the mannequins, the Autons. And
I was going to bring that up, and thank you for that. And I'm sorry, but unless it's Kim Cattrall coming at me looking like a mannequin, I'm running the other direction. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but don't mannequins just in the store creep you out? I mean, they just are creepy anyway.
I used to work at Dillard's. Those things are really fucking creepy, especially when you walk into a storeroom full of them. And, oh, my God, I'm glad I hadn't seen Doctor Who at that point, because at another store I used to work at, nobody realized this, but it was two stories tall. And it was a big warehouse store, and the second story, you could through this, like, crazy hidden back door. And then you go up there, and none of the lights work, and I swear to God, it looked like an old abandoned asylum up there. And it had just piles and piles and D-containers full of hangers and mannequins. And it's
okay,
the scariest thing I've ever seen in my life. So, yeah, mannequins.
Right.
I got you, Vicky.
Okay, now, here's the scariest part about Autons is that they are just soldiers for these creatures called the Nestine. And the Nestine are throughout Doctor Who also. Yes, they have robots that look like mannequins. And so these robots come to kill you. Have you seen that one, the Doctor Who, where he wakes up as David Tennant and it's Christmas time and they actually have guns in their wrists or whatever? See, they're actually robots, and they're not Cybermen robots. They don't come marching at you like Nazis. They come at you like Nestine robot soldiers. And so, and that's why they never ever stop, is they're actually taken over by this intelligence.
And see, that is why, like, that was the episodes I saw, the first episodes, because those were the ones with Rose Tyler, and those are the ones that got me into Doctor Who, because there was that connect to, I've been up in creepy storerooms full of mannequins too many times to count, and they weird me out really hard. And you could definitely tell that episode or those few episodes were written by somebody that had gotten out of retail, I swear to you. but I totally get it. They're just so weird. And yeah, the Nestine, that's another one we haven't mentioned, by the way. So
yes. And so, you know, they're scary. They're just scary. And so I choose them as classic scariness.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing I do have to say about the Auton and mannequins in general. For me, the first time that mannequins really became scary was because of Rod Serling. Okay, if you remember,
of course,
the classic episode of the girl who's out, and then she figures out that she's a mannequin, and they're let out like for a month to be free and then I have to come back and be a mannequin for years. Yeah. Yeah, that one freaked me the fuck out. But yes, you're very right about the autopsy. Now I'm gonna talk about a specific villain or aliens that really scare me. And again, I mention Twilight Zone because it really goes back to something earlier for me, and it actually goes back to two things. I'm going to be talking about the crinoids. And the crinoids were an alien race in Tom Baker's era. And they hearkened back to two things. They hearkened back to the invasion of the body snatchers, which still scares the living shit out of me. And again, this is the possession thing. But it's also not just one. They want to possess everybody. The second is that it really takes a lot from John Gillings, The Midwich Cuckoos, which is aliens that take over children. And the crinoids, they spread their seed pods and travel in pairs, and they arrive at Earth at the South Pole, and then remain dormant until the end of the 20th century, and all hell breaks loose. And that one really, really scares me. And I think they're one of the scariest, and they're not as well known, I think. Do you know who I'm talking about? Vic, you remember?
No, I don't. It's weird. How do you spell them?
Krynoid, the crinoids.
Okay. Because I'm having a hard time finding them.
Yeah, it's the Seeds of Doom, the one by Robert Banks Stewart.
Okay, I'll find it.
Okay. Okay, so both Vicki and I are basically the
same.
There
they
age.
Are. Oh, they're, oh, wow.
Yeah, exactly.
They're like giant spiders or something.
Yeah, but they came out of pods. Yeah, and the thing about it, too, that really scared, well, they're spiders, for one, I was just going to say, we're both basically the same age, and we grew up. And I think the first time that we ever saw Doctor Who was with Tom Baker on PBS. And I
right.
remember when that came on, I was hooked immediately. And so I watched all of those. And then about 3 years ago, we were able to go through the whole series again when I was with Richard. And I saw this one, and they're fucking scary. Just trust me on this. Right.
I remember this episode now, and I remember them killing them. I remember how this whole thing, they're a parasitic invaders. And just like the pods, you're right. It's just like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And
mm-hmm.
And so they have all these different forms. They have the big spider-like, crab-like. It kind of looks like a spider-crab mixed together. Or maybe even octopus, and then there's one that has a humanoid shape. Then there's this one that has like an elephant shape that looks mostly like a plant.
Yeah. And that's the other thing, they shapeshift too. So you don't know what the fuck they are.
Yes. Yes. And so it looks like one of the Vandermeer novels that I have read, Jeff Vandermeer, who wrote the Southern Reach trilogy, is all about how the life on Earth could change at any time if a small infection came from outer space, you know, a virus, bacteria, or a life form that took hold in one of the forests or swamplands.
Hello, all of Torchwood. Miracle
yeah.
Hour
yeah.
and all that.
Okay, so this creature is a lot like that. And so Yes, creepy.
So Gary. Rachel, you brought up that not all the aliens and monsters are evil. And I think that's very important to focus on. So now I'm going to ask each of one of you, and I'm going to start with you, Rachel, what is your favorite friendly alien or monster?
Why can't I remember all of a sudden I had it in my head? The lizard lady.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yes. Dang it. It's also, you know, I can see her face. I can see
I
all
know.
Of them. They're,
and her beautiful costuming and her veils that
dinosaurs.
She wears.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's hurting my brain because I can't remember right now, and I am so sorry, guys, but she is my favorite.
Don't even.
The lizard lady works. Don't worry about it. We all know who the lizard lady is. That's not a problem.
Yes. I mean, she's so nice and so.
And so smart.
I don't know. Smart, exactly. She's smart, and she's nice, and she's totally gay, and I love that representation.
Yes, I was just going to mention that. Yep. Yep, agreed.
Yeah.
So, Vicki, I actually think I know what you're going to say, and I have to come up with an alternate. But go ahead. What is your favorite alien race, alien slash monster in Doctor Who? Friendly.
Why don't you tell me who you think?
The Ood.
Well, I like the Ood. I like them a lot. But they're not my favorite.
Okay. Okay, then I'll take the Ood. Then tell me who your favorite is. I thought you were going to mention the Ood.
No. I mean, I was going to mention the Ood because, but when we first see the Ood, which also reminds me of one of the scariest of the Doctor Who bad guys. Because we haven't even scratched the surface of the really scary ones out there. But
no, we haven't.
The devil in the Impossible Planet. That's where the Ood first were introduced, and they were being influenced because the Ood, unfortunately, can be influenced so easily. And so I'm trying to find this right here. Dang it. Oh, well. Okay, so no, the Ood, I like the Ood and everything, and the Ood helped the Doctor regenerate and helped the Doctor through lots of things. And we saw that Donna had a real compassion for the Ood. And so, yeah they're great. They're a great friendly, but I really like the Adipose. They really try to help people get healthy by the fat dropping off of people, and then they kind of just, you know, they hovered up to their parent spaceship and flew away, kind of like the adipose.
Well, I will say this about the adipose. They are the cutest of all the alien groups. How can you not, like, just adopt them? They're like kittens. Seriously.
Right.
They're
kind of like kittens. Yes.
Yes.
And so I really, really like them. And so, here they are. Okay, I had to get the answer for Rachel. The Silurians. That's who
Thank
they
you.
Are. Yes, that's I have my. I'm sorry. I know I sounded like I was like, you know, airhead or something, but I was actually looking this up, trying to find them because all of us couldn't think of them. The Silurians. They were absolutely perfectly peaceful and, well,
and genteel.
Overall peaceful. They did have their military, and their military was quite military, but in the end, they came to having peace, and then they showed how humans, there was a juxtaposition with the Matt Smith episode, where they, mm-hmm. there was a juxtaposition of, well, we've been here before you. The Earth is really ours. And then the humans pretended to be peaceful and yet were aggressive and violent. And so those two episodes, I think there are two episodes on that one, mm-hmm. that really, really is a heartbreaking one. Good people died, or good creatures, good aliens and good humans.
I'm just going to say good people, because that's kind of how I've been referring to them, especially because she is so human, and not in the sense that she's bipedal and all that, in the sense that she has the same empathy and feelings and motivations even. And that's why I thought she was great. Like, her specifically as an example of her race,
right,
is just fucking perfect. Like, these are the kind of aliens that I would want to come to Earth, and I would hate it if the Earth that they came to was the one that it is now, which is exactly the same kind of Earth that she came to, and that's why she has to hide herself, you know?
Right.
Yeah, that's why she's my favorite, and I really appreciate you looking that up for me, because I was never going to remember, but God, she's also got some of the best costuming in the show.
Right, absolutely, and same with her companion, and they have great stories, too. And then, okay, Carl, there's another alien race that I really adore, and also there was one in Torchwood, and that's the Star Whales, the ones where they have all of London on their back floating around, and the humans are torturing them. Oh, humans. And the doctor...
we suck really hard, dude.
Yes, we do. We're so bad. That's one of the themes of Doctor Who, how bad we are. Aren't we going to do the bad human episode, too?
We should, because there's a lot of them.
Yes, there are.
So I'm glad you mentioned the Star Whales, because there are certain episodes that focus specifically on us using something that we shouldn't be using, and instead should be communicating with and
abusing, I think is the word you're thinking of.
Yeah. Instead of abusing, we should work together in tandem for both our benefits. That is one of the main faults that in humans that Doctor Who really brings out throughout the whole breadth of the series, from the first series with Hartnell on, that humans are not exactly the best of us, you know, the best race by any means. And I think that's a very good thing. Now, I do want to bring something up, and I want to see if you folks agree with this. I think our next episode, because we have not talked about a specific character yet, which we need to talk about. And I'm thinking that this character needs its own episode. And that would be the Master. Would you agree with that or not?
Yeah.
Or do we want to talk about?
Maybe we should do the Master and the Time Lords, because all in all, the Time Lords have been a villain towards our Doctor, and so maybe it should be the Master and the Time Lords.
I can see that.
Okay, agree with that. How about you, Rachel? Do you agree with that?
No, I agree with what Vicky's saying. That's kind of where I was going to go with that. And I do want to say one quick thing that you were just talking about. You know, one of the big themes of Doctor Who is
working in tandem versus trying to do it on your own and not communicating. And interestingly enough, that's how I got into Doctor Who, because Rose, you know, I got in on the Rose episodes. And in the very beginning, when she's trying to help save him from, you know, the shit down in the boiler room or whatever from the mannequin people, you know, she grabs onto the rope and swings around and blah, blah, blah. And she's like, I was a, you know, meddling gymnast or whatever.
Yeah.
And you really, like, it was that moment in the show that I was like, I think I want to keep watching this. I think I like where this girl is going here. And it wasn't because of the doctor, because frankly, he seemed like a big giant douchebag. Of course, you end up loving him, but he was a big giant douchebag. But it was Rose showing him, like, I have these talents, I have these things, I can do this, we can work together versus you trying to work alone and fix this shit. And that is actually the whole thing that got me into watching Doctor Who, was seeing Rose working with him and telling him, hey, you don't know shit about me. I can do more than you think, and I can help you in ways you didn't even know. And that really is, that's like the crux of the whole show, is people and other entities helping you in ways that you didn't know they would be able or willing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. In fact, on that subject, the first doctor, William Hartnell, always did things on his own. And it was Barbara and Ian who were always on him, well, if you would tell us, if you would let us help. And through the show, through their episodes, the doctor became more open-minded. And as he let them into his world and let them help and expanded their knowledge of the world of a Time Lord, that whole thing of working together, I think, became a theme. It started way back in the first Doctor.
Yeah, and I mentioned that too. It's very, very true. The Companions, of course, we already did the Companion series, but you know, the Companions always help the Doctor to evolve and vice versa. And we grow when we work together. And I'm actually working with two of my favorite people on the face of the earth right here. And by the way, you both have made me better. I hope that's the same case in tandem. Probably not, but nonetheless, I need to acknowledge that. So I think at this point we're in a good spot to stop and say that our next episode is going to be The Master and the Time Lords. And this is going to be a series, I think, that could go on for quite a bit of time. So I'm really happy that you guys joined us today, that our audience joined us today. And I'm just going to go over to Vicki very quickly. And Vicki, why don't you tell us what's going on with your film, Lake?
I cannot believe that destiny has done these things. The whole COVID that stopped our production back in August, and several of us got COVID, and we had to wait, and we had to drop people and interview new actors and bring them in, has actually been like it should be, because last weekend when we were filming, our two newest actresses just hit their mark so well. They became these characters that it was so awesome to just be there watching them do what they were doing. So that's really all I can say about filming so far. We're just in the middle of filming the last part of the film, of the movie, and delays sometimes are a way of the world telling you that, things
are not on the right path.
Yeah, yeah. So that's all I really have to say about the film. That's
okay.
It.
All right. So at this point, I just want to do a quick housekeeping here. And tomorrow we have Adam Ferenz. He's going to be doing the Cathode Ray Mission, and they're going to be doing a show on John Carpenter. And he has author Troy Howarth joining him. And Troy wrote a definitive book just released on John Carpenter. So that should be a great, great episode to listen to. On Saturday, we have Rock This Town Radio with TC, and he's going to be doing songs that include either word of Stop and Go. So that's what's happening on Saturday. On Sunday, we have special guest Noel Vera with us. Noel is the premier Philippine film reviewer and historian. And we're going to be talking about weird horror movies from the Philippines. And that is on Sunday. And then on Monday, Vicky's going to join us again for a spooky season commentary watch of 13 Ghosts. So that'll be a lot of fun. And that's the remake. That's the 2001 remake. We'll be doing that. And I'm getting things ready for October. November. And we'll have things ready and willing to go for next week. Of course, I'm back from vacation and working really hard and getting things back on point here at Deviant Legion. Again, I'd like to thank Vicky very much for being with us today. And as always, thank you so much, Rachel, for being my co-host and my right-hand lady. And I really appreciate that. And I think at this point, do you folks have anything else to add before we sign off here?
I'm all good.
I just want to say, you guys, we didn't even scratch the surface of the villains of Doctor Who. And so this might not be over, but the thing is, just go out there and watch your favorite Doctor Who, because it's especially good for Halloween time. The Great Intelligence. And so, anyway, we didn't even scratch the surface. So go ahead and
I think we
find your
own part two. There will be part
we'll
two.
Yeah, we'll have
of this.
To.
No question.
We'll have to.
No question.
I think we should go through each doctor and say which one was the best villain or something like that.
Okay, we can work on that.
Yeah.
Okay. So again, thank you very much for being with us, and let us just say good night. Good night, everyone. Good afternoon,
good night.
Whatever it is.